We will dream boldly, and nothing will stand in our way because we are Americans. The future is ours, and our golden age has just begun.
Your golden age of corruption, maybe. Welcome to it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and a whole bunch of other affiliates coast to coast and around the globe. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com, now in our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking. Glad to have you with us. A lot to get to today, including...
Oh, heavens, yes.
Including one of my most favorite guests, I think, when it comes to the issue of corruption and governmental ethics, or in this case, as you might guess, lack thereof. Is that the right way to put it, Desi Doyen?
I think so, yeah, sadly.
Yeah, but we do need to begin today first with a correction. As you may know, when we make them on this show, as rare as that may be, we do try to put them up front as opposed to in the back of the book where they, you know, corrections generally get buried. Though the error on yesterday's show was not actually mine, it is important to correct it publicly here since it went out over this program. My guest yesterday, former FEC chair Ann Ravel, mentioned that she had heard that current FEC chair, the current one, Ellen Weintraub, who the Trump administration tried to fire from that role unlawfully late last week, had actually been physically removed from her office by U.S. Marines by force after she was informed by email of her unlawful firing as chair of the Federal Election Commission. In fact, though Weintraub is challenging her removal, and has been locked out of her email and office computer, et cetera, the story of her being physically removed from her office by anyone, much less U.S. Marines sent in to remove her, appears to be entirely fake. Circulated by right-wingers who also claimed in this false telling that I was able to track down late last night that Trump had discovered Weintraub had committed massive election fraud in the 2020 and 2024 elections.
Oh, I see.
So she had to be removed by the U.S. Marines. Anyway,
oh,
yeah, Ann Ravel fell for it. She told me she hadn't seen that part of the false claim, by the way, about the massive election fraud, but she apologized a few hours after airtime via email for being, quote, sucked into the disinfo regarding the Marines removing Weintraub from the FEC. In fact, Ann said she touched base with Weintraub directly last night after the show to confirm that part of the story was actually completely false. So, my apologies for the error. Of course, I didn't know about it, but we did put it out over our airwaves. It did not happen, though it may be a sign of the times that even Ann Ravel and I, and probably those of you who heard the show live, were stunned by the story, but saw it as completely plausible right now, given everything else that is currently going on.
Yeah, that part of it is kind of disturbing.
So, good news, that part of the story at least did not happen. Bad news, it sounded totally plausible, and we accidentally helped to spread that inaccurate news on this program. Worst news, give it time. I hope it never happens, but, well, you know, I'll just say that, well, I hope it never happens. Even as the Trump administration continues to remove longtime public officials in good standing, removing them unlawfully from jobs across pretty much the entirety of the federal government, spurring lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, which, by the way, are, at least so far, being upheld one after another against the Trump administration by the courts in favor of the challengers who are bringing these dozens of suits against him. Just one example from last night after we got off air. Kyle Chaney, the Politico legal affairs correspondent, tweeted, quote, "Just in, Judge Amy Berman Jackson becomes the fifth judge today to block an aspect of Trump's early term orders, this time the firing of ethics watchdog Hampton Dellinger." And he added, "The night isn't over yet." From Judge Berman's order, quote, "Hereby order that from the time of this order through midnight of February 13, 2025, plaintiff Hampton Dellinger shall continue to serve as the special counsel of the Office of Special Counsel, the position he occupied at 7:22 p.m. on Friday, February 7, 2025, when he received an email from the president, and the defendants may not deny him access to the resources or materials of that office or recognize the authority of any other person as special counsel." The judge writes, "This period may only be extended by further order of the court. So ordered," signed Judge Amy Berman Jackson. So what happened here? Well, U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson of D.C., the U.S. District Court in D.C., ordered Special Counsel Hampton Dellinger immediately reinstated to his job after he was quietly fired by Donald Trump on Friday night. And now, not to be confused with special counsels like Jack Smith or Robert Mueller, et cetera, the Office of the Special Counsel at DOJ is tasked to enforce federal whistleblower laws and the Hatch Act, which prohibits federal employees from engaging in certain political activities to ensure a nonpartisan federal workforce. It generally works during Democratic administrations. It generally is ignored during Republican administrations. You may recall all sorts of folks during the first Trump administration, from Kellyanne Conway to, I think, Ivanka Trump, if I remember correctly, were found in violation of the Hatch Act, which restricts federal officials from using their official authority in office to influence elections, to engage in political campaigning, running for public office while on duty in federal workplaces, et cetera. Unfortunately, there's no specific penalty for violating the Hatch Act. So whatever penalty or discipline there might be, that's up to the president, which is why Donald Trump just ignored the Hatch Act during his first term. If he can do away with the Office of Special Counsel at DOJ, he will never be bothered by violations of the Hatch Act again, because there'll be no one to determine if he or anyone in his administration has actually violated it. Moreover, agency and administration whistleblowers will have a much harder time coming forward if there is no one in the Office of Special Counsel. And that, too, should work out great for an unprecedentedly corrupt administration like this one. So Hampton Dellinger's challenge to his firing, that will move forward. And for now, according to the judge, if the administration actually respects the courts, which remains very much to be seen, he will remain the director of the Office of Special Counsel until that administrative stay on his potentially unlawful firing is lifted in some way, as the matter is further heard by the court. The Trump administration appealed, by the way, the judge's ruling there, even though temporary administrative stays are not typically appealable. Doesn't keep them from trying, I guess. In other Trump-related crime and corruption and avoidance of accountability news today, Steve Bannon, the longtime ally of Donald Trump, pleaded guilty on Tuesday to felony fraud for helping to defraud donors who were dumb enough to give money to supposedly build a wall at the southern U.S. border, that during Trump's first term in office. In exchange for the guilty plea from Bannon in New York State criminal court, he agreed to a conditional discharge and he waived his right to appeal. He was sentenced to 3 years conditional discharge. That means he will not be allowed to serve as an officer or director of a charity or any charitable organization in New York State, or any fundraising or not-for-profit organization in New York State. He will not be allowed to receive or hold assets for any charitable organizations, etc. But don't get too excited about it, because he will not face any jail time if he follows those conditions. He also may not be arrested during that time period. In other words, he may not get arrested. If he does or violates any of the other terms of the deal, then he could face up to 4 years behind bars. In a statement, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said, quote, "This resolution achieves our primary goal to protect New York's charities and New Yorkers' charitable giving from fraud." Bannon, as NBC reports this afternoon, was not repentant at all after court. You'll be shocked to learn. He called Bragg and State AG Letitia James a, quote, "existential threat," unquote, to the Trump administration. Yeah, because they care about the rule of law. In any event, apparently he was referring to the criminal and civil cases that the two had brought successfully, I should add, against Donald Trump, who was found liable for more than $500 million in his New York civil state fraud trial and guilty of 34 criminal felony counts related to his hush money payoffs to porn star Stormy Daniels to help him cheat to win the 2016 election, also under New York state law. He is appealing the fraud charges, and he was given an unconditional discharge instead of being sent to jail for the 34 felonies, since he was somehow able to become president again. After the sentencing on Tuesday, Bannon said, quote, "I'm calling on right now the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, to begin an immediate criminal investigation into Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, all of it for what they did to President Trump." Whatever, Steve. The now twice felony convicted Bannon was first hit with charges related to this phony build the wall scheme in a different case by federal prosecutors back in the summer of 2020. Related to this scam to take money from the Trump donors dumb enough to give it to him and a couple of other scammers to supposedly build a wall on the southern border, promising in the bargain that not 1 cent would go to them or any of the other folks raising the money.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, suckers. They pocketed millions. Trump pardoned Bannon for the federal crimes that he was charged with before he would ever go to trial. He was pardoned at the end of his first term. In the current state case against Bannon, prosecutors from Bragg's office charged that he charged him with 6 counts of money laundering, conspiracy, and a scheme to defraud. Bannon pleaded not guilty at the time. He called the case partisan political weaponization of the criminal justice system, and on Tuesday, he pleaded guilty to one of those counts. Federal authorities said Bannon used the nonprofit organization to receive more than $1 million of wall-building funds. He was going to face trial March 4, and Trump couldn't pardon him here because these were state charges, not federal. He already spent 4 months in jail last year after being found guilty of contempt of Congress for refusing to testify to the House January 6 committee regarding the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Also on Tuesday, Donald Trump pardoned the disgraced former Democratic governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, who served several years in prison Until Trump commuted his sentence related to his efforts to corruptly sell the U.S. Senate seat that was vacated by Barack Obama when he became president back in 2008. But Blagojevich started saying nice things about Donald Trump from within prison. So his sentence was commuted at the time. Now Trump has given him a full pardon, because that's how he rolls if you say nice things about him. Also, Trump's personal defense attorney, who is currently serving as the acting deputy attorney general at the Department of Justice, ordered the DOJ to drop federal bribery charges immediately against New York's Democratic-ish Mayor Eric Adams. He was charged with bribery for giving favors to Turkish interests in exchange for expensive plane trips and hotel stays, etc. The extraordinary memo ordering that these charges be dropped from Trump's attorney slash DOJ official also ordered prosecutors in New York not to take additional investigative steps against the Democrat until after November's mayoral election, when Adams is running again, though it left open the possibility the charges could be refiled after that, following a review. This this intervention by the president and his lawyers, the reasoning for it, that a powerful defendant like Eric Adams would be too occupied with official duties to face accountability for alleged crimes. Sound familiar? This, of course, marks an extraordinary deviation from long-standing Justice Department norms. Nothing like this has ever been done, certainly not in modern times. But, of course, given the unspeakable corruption of this criminally convicted president, I guess nobody should be too surprised. Both Blagojevich and Adams have been sucking up to Trump in recent months, and, well, on Tuesday, they both got their gift for it. It also makes clear that corruption is now pretty much all but legal, at least for Donald Trump and his friends in these United States. If you don't believe me, ask Matt Drudge. Yes, at the very top of the Drudge Report, of all places, earlier on Tuesday, links to five headlines. Here they are. Justice Department seeks dismissal of case against New York City mayor. The Don pardons former Illinois Governor Blagojevich. Guts whistleblower office pauses enforcement of law banning bribery of foreign officials. I'll get to those in a moment. And finally, all caps, golden age of corruption. Well, it certainly is. And that is where we will pick things up with government ethics expert, poor guy, Craig Holman of Public Citizen, right after a quick break. Also, Desi Doyen and her latest Green News Report a little bit later. Yes. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Well, Donald Trump promised that the, quote, golden age of America begins right now in his inauguration address only 3 weeks ago. It sure seems like what he really meant was a golden age of American corruption, or at least corruption by his family and his friends, his corporate business partners and political cronies. From pardoning all of the violent January 6 offenders on his first day in office, to firing inspectors general for more than a dozen government agencies, to stopping the prosecutions of a whole bunch of Republican elected officials and even some Democratic ones that have cozied up to Donald Trump over the years, to the removal of scores of senior DOJ and FBI officials so far. He will be removing many more in the days ahead, I expect. To ordering all work at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the folks who police big bank, credit card, and payday lender fraud on behalf of American consumers, ordering that work immediately stopped over this past weekend. To Trump signing a new executive order on Monday, halting all new enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, or FCPA, and ordering a review of all pending FCPA cases. That's the law that prevents bribery by Americans and American companies of foreign officials, with Trump describing the federal law as a, quote, excessive barrier to U.S. commerce. to quietly removing the head of the Office of Special Counsel at the Justice Department last Friday. He's the guy in charge of overseeing whistleblower complaints against the government and enforcing laws meant to tamp down on undue political influence. To Trump's removal of the director of the Government Ethics Office late on Monday. Well, with all of that, it certainly seems like we are on the verge of a golden age of American corruption, if not there already. And though we can clearly see it all happening in front of our eyes in real time, it remains wildly unclear to me still what, if anything, is actually going to stop it at this point. On that last matter, the removal of the director of the Office of Government Ethics, the office tasked with ensuring government workers comply with conflict of interest and ethics requirements in the executive branch, Politico reported late on Monday afternoon that its director, David Huitema, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, had been confirmed by the U.S. Senate back in December for a five-year term after his nomination by President Biden had been held up by Republicans for a full year. His dismissal was unceremoniously announced in one sentence on the OGE website on Friday, stating that the office had been notified that Trump is removing him as director. He later said he was notified about that removal via email that same day. That is the latest in Trump's effort to remove people charged with oversight of his administration from the federal government. His removal of Huitema, Politico reports, is likely to draw criticism from Democrats who have been sounding the alarm about, for example, Elon Musk and the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, and that group's attempts at sweeping and, according to a series of court rulings, apparently illegal cuts across federal agencies. California's Democratic Senator Adam Schiff, for example, in letters first shared with Politico on Monday, pressed White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles and Huitema, now apparently fired, to verify whether Elon Musk was in fact in compliance with ethics standards in his capacity as a so-called special government employee. Schiff also asked if Musk had completed a financial disclosure or if he was provided a written waiver that would exempt him from the federal criminal conflict of interest statute. Musk's companies have billions of dollars in government contracts. The answer, apparently, was firing Huitema, who served for 9 years as ethics chief at the State Department and otherwise for 19 years in various capacities in the federal government. In a statement after finally being sworn in mid-December of last year, after waiting more than a year for a vote in the Senate, Huitema said that he looked forward to helping Trump's nominees ensure that they can start working, quote, free from obstacles caused by potential conflicts of interest, which could prevent them from being effective in their jobs. His statement also stressed the importance of being, quote, both thorough and as efficient as possible. Don't know about thorough, but if there's nobody doing the job, it sure should be efficient, at least for the Trump appointees. OGE directors typically serve five-year terms, allowing them to overlap administrations as part of an attempt to reduce partisanship. So much for that. Huitema, in an interview with CNN on Monday, said he was unaware of any specific agency action that would have precipitated Trump's decision, saying, quote, my sense is that the president doesn't want the government of the Office of Government Ethics or really anyone with an independent voice to address concerns that are raised. Sounds about right. He said the OGE does not set policy, quote, ours is an office that supports federal employees in complying with the law and avoiding missteps. He said ethics isn't about what the government can or can't do or should or shouldn't do in terms of policy. It's about individuals acting with integrity. Well, now I see why this guy had to go. On Monday, Trump named Georgia Republican, former Georgia Republican congressman and failed U.S. Senate candidate, now Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins, as the interim head of the ethics agency to, I guess, look after himself and his boss. On Monday night, Lisa Gilbert, co-president of government watchdog group Public Citizen, issued a statement noting, quote, nothing says corruption like firing the top ethics cop on the beat, consistent with the corporate conflicts, massive wealth, and big tech bro connections, the incoming administration continues to exploit all avenues to increase their ability to profit off of public service. She added, the Trump swamp is growing. Joining us now from Public Citizen is Craig Holman, an expert on campaign finance reform, governmental ethics, lobbying practices, and the impact of money in politics. Public Citizen is a national nonprofit advocacy organization that has been challenging corporate power and demanding government accountability for more than 50 years now. Craig serves as their Capitol Hill lobbyist on government affairs. Craig Holman, sir, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here, Brad.
It's difficult to know where to start, Craig. I will say that when I think of government ethics, when I hear a headline about something like this, I think of you and the work that you have done for so many years to try and help enforce these laws. So, you know, no pressure, but let's begin with Fatima, if that's how his name is pronounced, and his quiet firing on Friday. I don't know if this, like so many of the rest of these firings, is unlawful or not, but how critical is the director of the Office of Government Ethics and the office itself when it comes to ensuring government ethics, avoiding conflicts of interest for executive branch officials?
The Office of Government Ethics serves a very fundamental purpose to try to educate and make everyone in the administration, over 140 different federal agencies, understand what the ethics rules are, understand what the conflict of interest code is all about, and then help officials, public officials, comply with those types of rules. The Office of Government Ethics doesn't really have much enforcement authority. Mm-hmm. I would like to see OGE given that kind of enforcement authority, but it's always played a role of more an advisory and an educational role and checking out the conflicts of interest of all the senior nominees that are coming into the new administration. So they run over their personal financial statements, they point out the potential conflicts, and then they encourage the nominee to divest of those conflicts or at least recuse themselves when there is a conflict in taking official actions. David Fatima, by the way, his nomination was pending before the Office of Government Ethics all the way for like almost a year.
Yeah.
And then in November, I coordinated an effort to get it on the Senate's agenda so we could get him appointed before Trump stepped into the office. And so I helped get Fatima appointed to the Office of Government Ethics. That was really one of my victories so far in this session.
Well, so much for that.
Now it's been canceled. Now it's been canceled. By the way, I mean, you're absolutely right, Brad. What we're seeing here, besides utter chaos on Capitol Hill, is a full-scale assault on accountability, oversight, and the checks and balances. It goes way beyond the Office of Government Ethics. You know, you pointed out it already affected the Office of Special Counsel, 17 independent IGs have been fired. We're seeing it right and left. And by the way, almost all these firings have a direct financial impact on Elon Musk. So we're just seeing the conflict of interest code being torn apart, and it seems to be in favor of one particular person, especially.
Is that one particular person Donald Trump, or is it Elon Musk at this point?
Well, Elon Musk, but Donald Trump as well. Donald Trump just idolizes Elon Musk. And so, you know, every agency he's gone into besides the ethics agency, mm-hmm. transportation, interior, justice, agriculture, all those agencies were overlooking Elon Musk's business practices.
Yeah.
And the people who were in charge of that have since been fired throughout these agencies. And now we're seeing it even happening in the oversight agencies, OGE and the special counsel in the IG's office. It's incredible.
On the specific matter of Elon Musk and his work as an executive special government official, whatever that means, whatever they're calling him and his Doge bros, CNN reports that White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt recently told journalists that Musk, quote, will excuse himself, unquote, if he encounters a conflict with his contracts and his work with the government. Feel better? Isn't that sufficient, Craig? The White House says that he promises.
No, that isn't sufficient. And even if you read the words of that of that statement, it specifies contracts. It does not specify his business interests, his investments, the cryptocurrency that he owns. They're just talking about contracts, sir. And first of all, I seriously doubt he's going to recuse himself from the contracts. It would have been someone like David Hutima or the inspector generals who would have made sure that he did so. And now they're gone. So we're not going to see that kind of oversight. But keep in mind, Elon Musk's conflicts go way, way beyond his contracts. The contracts are just one little part of it.
Yeah, indeed. We talked a little bit yesterday, or last couple of days, about the CFPB, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, and the fact that the Doge bros are said to be in there now. Elon Musk doesn't have a government contract yet, but he is working on a payment app like a PayPal type or Cash App type thing. And he's able to look at what the CFPB has been looking at regarding his effort for an app like that. He's able to look at how they have brought accountability to his competitors just by being in there and being able to look at the files. Craig Holman, you mentioned the inspector, the inspectors general, about 17 or 18 of them at different executive branch agencies. It's actually been kind of stunning to me how little attention that matter has received. There's actually, you know, there's a lot for all of us to try to keep track of. But their firing seems to be unlawful as well. But how important are those officials to government ethics and accountability for the executive branch from your seat as a government affairs and ethics expert and lobbyist? And I'm asking specifically those officials. In other words, they've been removed, but do the IG offices still continue their work in creating reports, et cetera, even with an IG where he or she has has been removed? Or does all oversight of the particular executive branches cease in those offices in a case like that?
The main work was done by those 17, or you could be right, it may be 18 inspector generals who have been fired. The main work was done by those inspector generals. So when they got locked out of their offices, and by the way, they are locked out. I mean, even though their firing was illegal, they've been taken, their computer resources, computer access to the office, all of that has been stripped from them. So they can no longer do that work. There are some inspector generals who have to be fired for cause, and those are the few that continue to operate, but it's just a skeletal crew now for the inspector general's office. The ones that were really out there, on the front lines have been fired, and they're sitting at home right now. There is a lawsuit dealing with that because the firing, before Trump could fire him, it was supposed to notify Congress 30 days beforehand.
Right.
And there was no such notification whatsoever. You know, it's a practice we're seeing all over the place. I mean, when it comes to the firing of the Office of the Special Counsel, that firing was supposed to have been done for cause. And there was no statement as to some malfeasance that's done by the Special Counsel. And so, you know, they sued, and a court has temporarily reinstated the Office of Special Counsel. But we'll see if that holds very long. When it comes to David Hutima, by the way, I do want to clarify this. One of the weaknesses of OGE is that the director of the Office of Government Ethics does serve at the pleasure of the president. So there is nothing illegal in that firing, but clearly the intent is to just strip any kind of accountability and oversight over the Trump administration and Elon Musk in particular.
And would you see his that job as similar to the inspectors general in that when the director is removed, he was supposed to serve for 5 years, 5-year term, but when the director is removed, that the work of the office essentially stops?
Yes, it didn't have to be. It could have been taken over by the deputy director, Shelley Finlayson, who also is fairly good, has always been a very good public officer. But no, Trump didn't want Shelley or anyone else running the Office of Government Ethics who actually believed in ethics. So he appointed his own crony, Doug Collins, who at the same time is acting director of the VA. So he doesn't even have time to do the tasks of OGE. But since he's the director, he calls the shot. He determines what OGE will do and will not do. And at this point, it looks like OGE is going to be just left hanging. And by the way, that another thing that really scares me about this, I mean, if OGE can't really do anything anymore because it's being led by someone who's a Trump loyalist, this makes it a prime target again for Elon Musk and Doge saying, okay, they're not doing anything, so let's
get rid of them.
Kill the whole agency. Yep. And that's, I'm expecting that down the line here.
And that was something that's that I know folks worked a long time on, the Office of Government Ethics, to put that in place in the first place, to make sure it did what it did. So I know that, you know, ethics folks like yourself must just be wringing your hands today seeing this going on. There's another matter that I mentioned in the introduction there, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the FCPA, which, as I understand it, makes it unlawful for Americans and American companies to bribe foreign officials in order to do business in their countries. As noted, a new directive from Trump has apparently halted all new FCPA enforcement for 6 months, with an option to extend it for another six. And he has ordered a review of all current pending FCPA cases. TPM's David Kurtz notes that what he describes as the kicker in Trump's directive here in his description of bribery and other activity in the order as, quote, routine business practices in other nations, and his lament that the FCPA is, quote, excessive barrier to U.S. commerce. Your response, Craig Holman, to that, and whether the FCPA is actually an optional law that can be enforced or not at the whim of a U.S. president?
The Federal Corrupt Protection Act has always been a thorn in the side of Donald Trump, even prior to his first administration. He would often complain about, you know, his businesses and other American businesses being at a disadvantage because they couldn't bribe government officials to do what they wanted. And so he always, even way back then, he was claiming that, you know, we've got to gut this act. And now he's stepped into office and he's done so at this point. Think about the rationale that he's offering. He's, you know, saying that that bribery will produce greater economic gains for American businesses. And so we should go into other foreign countries and start bribing right and left to get our business interests paid attention to. I mean, that's unbelievable.
It is, but it's absolutely mind-blowing. But that is exactly what he's talking about. This is, you know, to do businesses in a foreign country, some corrupt country, say, sure, you can do business here if you pay me off. Trump is saying, well, hey, there's other companies in other countries who are able to pay off, pay bribes to do business there. Why can't American companies do that? That is literally what the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act is meant to prevent. It is mind-blowing.
And take a look at the comparison at home with the first Trump administration. Trump owned that hotel, the Trump Hotel, right in the middle of Washington, D.C., another one in New York. And all these foreign governments, especially foreign governments, would pay hefty prices to fill up Trump's hotel, knowing that money is going into Trump's pocket. As a matter of fact, the Saudi Arabian prince once rented out a whole floor of the New York Trump Hotel and then never bothered to show up. The whole purpose was just to essentially bribe Donald Trump.
Well, which sounds very quaint now, because now they could just buy his cryptocurrency. There are all sorts of ways to put money into Trump's pockets pretty much directly. And Trump has fired all the cops on the beat who might have prevented that, or at least sounded the alarm about it. So all that's left, it seems to me, we'll see how well the courts continue to hold up. We hope they do. But, you know, as I understand it, you work most closely with folks in Congress. And aside from occasional outrage expressed by some Democrats in, you know, TV appearances, statements, rallies at some of the federal agencies that Trump is attempting to either gut or shut entirely, I am of course, hearing nothing from any Republicans about any of this, not a surprise, but are you hearing from the folks you work with on Congress any kind of murmurs at all about how all of these actions are really just removing constitutional powers from the legislative branch and all but giving the laws actually created by Congress, giving the finger to those laws, essentially, along with their own constitutional powers? Is there any concern in Congress about what is going on, particularly from the Republican side?
Well, there is concern on the Democratic side, especially, and there should be among the American public. The congressional Republicans have marched in lockstep with Donald Trump, and that's made all these illegal activities possible, because Trump just simply violates the law, and if Congress doesn't stand up and object, who's left? The only ones left are the courts, you know, and so Public Citizen has filed 5 lawsuits already, and more are coming.
Good.
But, you know, the courts don't really have their own police force. So with Trump controlling the Attorney General's office, that is the police force, Trump essentially controlling Congress, that could actually change the whole legislative dynamic against Trump if they wanted to. But Trump runs that whole show. And so if we've seen already with one case, one judge ordered Trump to release billions of dollars in federal grants, and Trump just simply said no.
Yep.
It won't do it, and has walked away. Who's going to enforce the order, the court order? So if we win in court over and over, is Trump just going to walk away? And are the congressional Republicans going to let him do that? I'm hoping that if this happens a couple times over, a few congressional Republicans will say, okay, this has gone too far. This is, in fact, a constitutional crisis. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen it yet.
What will be required, as you see it, you're not the only one mentioning constitutional crisis. We did so ourselves yesterday on that very same point. Irwin Shamirinsky, the dean at the UC Berkeley Law School, on Friday said, quote, "We are in the middle of a constitutional crisis right now." He said there have been so many unconstitutional and illegal actions in the first 18 days of the Trump presidency. We have never seen anything like this. So, I'm wondering your sort of big picture thoughts on this from someone who's worked in D.C. for so many years. Is this moment as dire as Shamirinsky suggests from your perspective? And most notably, what will be required to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, if that is ever possible?
Yes, it is dire. We are right on the precipice of losing American democracy here. You know, the first Trump administration, you know, he sounded like he wanted to actually, you know, end democracy. And then by the end of it, I mean, he actually tried throwing a coup d'etat on January 6th. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't very familiar with how things work in his first administration. He didn't expect to win, first of all. And so he stepped into office not knowing what's going on. This time around, he knows what he's doing. And that's why we've seen this flurry of, I believe it's been so far like 40 different executive orders in just a matter of a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And he knows he's got Congress behind him. He may have the Supreme Court behind him. And so he's just marching unrestrained over our democratic norms and our democratic institutions. This is a very dire situation we're seeing here.
And to put it all back together again, if it's even possible, do you see a pathway toward that is still available?
The pathway is we're going to have to get some congressional Republicans to finally say, okay, this has gone too far. And if there are just a handful of them that would join with congressional Democrats, then they can start reestablishing checks and balances against the executive branch. That's going to be the key. If that doesn't happen, let's hope we can make it two more years and that voters will change the composition of Congress.
Yeah. It's going to be up to the voters, I fear, Craig. Craig Holman, PhD, serves as Public Citizen's Capitol Hill lobbyist on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. It is always a delight speaking with you, sir, even in moments like this. Thank you very much for joining us today. You can find their work at citizen.org. They're also on Twitter at public_citizen, but go visit them at Blue Sky, which is a much nicer place. You'll find them at Public Citizen. Craig, really appreciate you joining us today. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
You're right. Glad to be here, Brad. Take care.
Thank you, my friend. All right, I love that guy.
Yeah, he is so incredibly nice and knowledgeable and clear.
But how are you enjoying the golden age of corruption so far, Desi Doyen?
I am not enjoying it at all. Oh. In fact, I am so old, I remember back when Republicans were, pretended to care about bribery and corruption.
Really? When was that?
Oh, like last year when they had things that they had to say about, Ukraine and how corrupt that was and how important that was to them. And now they're like, where are those Republicans now?
You got it wrong. They were pretending about fake corruption.
Yeah.
That's what really bothers them. Real corruption, apparently no problem at all.
They're good with that.
By the way, there are some special elections coming up this year. Three of them, if Democrats were to win all three, I know it's very difficult, but if that crazy idea were to come to pass, then Democrats would take control of the U.S. House again. And Hakeem Jeffries would be the speaker, and they could actually do stuff like, impeach the criminal president of the United States before it was completely thrown out in the U.S. Senate. But, you can't win if you don't play.
This is true.
All right, let's take a quick break. Speaking of not winning, I don't know. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Desi Doyen and her latest Green News report. I'm sure there's some good news there, right? Maybe not.
We'll see.
That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. All right, Des, I'm reviewing the items in our upcoming Green News Report. That's not good.
It's not great, but listen, it's important to know what is actually happening.
Okay, that's the new tagline for the broadcast and the Green News Report, so please enjoy it, our latest GNR.
Scientists expected cooler conditions this time around.
Hottest January on record globally surprises scientists. Trump administration halts all funding for national EV charging network. Plus, Super Bowl ads take a break from electric cars.
I wonder why. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This week, Doge also sent the National Weather Service so-called buyout offers. More buyout offers? Man, when it rains, it pours. I think there's no way to know anymore.
I see, because he fired all the weather people. Not that funny. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, scientists have been expecting temperatures to cool since the El Nino of 2023, but that does not seem to be happening.
No, sadly, it is not. January 2025 was the world's warmest January on record.
What's going on?
Since record keeping began in the 1850s, it overtook last year's warmest January on record by a sizable margin, according to Europe's climate service Copernicus. While the United States saw abnormally frigid temperatures in January, extreme heat was broiling Australia, Mexico, West Africa, and the Caribbean. The new January heat record surprised scientists because a cooling La Nina event is underway in the tropical Pacific Ocean, and that would normally be expected to cool the globe slightly, but that isn't happening yet, raising further questions about the pace of climate change.
And further questions about whether scientists know anything about anything.
Well, here's Gavin Schmidt, chief scientist at NASA, on BBC News.
The basic reason we're having records being broken and we've had this like kind of uninterrupted, decades-long warming trend is because we're increasing the amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Until we stop doing that and until we in fact get to net zero, we're still going to be seeing record warm temperatures.
So basically, whatever happens from month to month, it's still going to be the baseline of temperatures continuing to go up and up.
Okay.
Despite the January 2024 heat record, the Trump administration is ramping up its efforts to increase greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere that drive dangerous global warming while they are bulldozing policies intended to reduce dependence on fossil fuels and cut carbon emissions.
It makes no sense.
First up, the Trump administration Federal Highway Administration has frozen a Biden-era program to build a federally funded national network of electric vehicle charging stations. It halted the $5 billion initiative aimed at helping states deploy electric vehicle charging stations along major highways and thoroughfares. The move is likely illegal. The National Electric Vehicle Charging Program was established by the bipartisan infrastructure law and mandated by Congress.
Well, you're assuming he cares about what's illegal and what isn't.
On his first full day as Secretary of the Department of Interior, former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum weakened directives that protect the public's lands and wildlife from fossil fuel development. Burgum issued a new guidance weakening protections for national monuments, migratory birds, endangered and threatened species, and hobbling clean energy development and opening up significant landscapes to resource extraction with the goal of further increasing fossil fuels on the public's lands.
Welcome to the interior.
Burgum also reinstated all fossil fuel leases that had been canceled under the Biden administration, and he offered even more parcels of public land for oil and gas drilling, among other pro-fossil fuel actions.
Just giving it all away.
Trump himself issued an executive order on Monday declaring that it is, quote, the policy of the United States to end the use of paper straws. Trump is literally reversing President Biden's initiative, phasing out the federal government's purchases of single-use plastics in government buildings over the next few years, like plastic straws. It was intended to reduce plastic pollution and the costs of waste management for the federal government.
Well, we'd hate to do that.
And, of course, it proves that there is no issue too small and too petty for Trump. And finally, a shift in Sunday's Super Bowl broadcast this year. Fewer car makers advertise than usual, unlike in recent years. And of those, only two brands focused on electric cars. Hmm. But even those featured EVs plus their gasoline-powered siblings together, mm-hmm. like the Jeep ad starring actor Harrison Ford, which encouraged people to be open-minded and nice to each other about their car choices. Bloomberg News analysts say the drop in EV advertising is likely due in part to Trump turning EVs into a culture war issue. Advocacy group Science Moms ran an ad about addressing climate change, but that ad aired only in Los Angeles.
Well, I saw it, thought it was great. For much more on all of these sad stories, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm riding in your car. You turn on the radio.
Well, at least it still has a radio. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. There,
yes.
There were a couple of points that we were not able to get in concerning Trump ending the EV charging network
yes.
across the country, which we don't even know, by the way, if he can do that legally, right?
Right. It's
point?
Not clear. Okay. But right now, the Federal Highway Administration has frozen all of the funds that the states were receiving to build out the national EV charging network.
Under the law.
Under the law that was appropriated by
right?
Congress.
That's right.
You know, it's important because it's a lot of money. So helping the states do that gets it actually done. Well, it turns out that it's not just a freeze on funds for new installations, but also for EV charger installations that are now under construction. So that means that, you know, projects
oh,
in the works or ones that are currently underway for contracting will now have to come to a screeching halt. So that means
wasted money, the money that they've already begun is
yes,
now wasted.
Is down the drain
yep.
and potentially means that they'll be leaving abandoned construction sites because, you know, nothing makes America great again like abandoned industrial sites.
Unbelievable. And yeah, and of course, very efficient.
Extremely.
Just spending money, wasting money like that.
You could set it on fire. That would be slightly more efficient.
Of course, none of this. Some people think this is going to hurt Elon Musk, but it don't because Tesla already has their own charging network set up
yes,
across
they do.
The country. So
takes
this,
care of those competitors real
it
quick.
Do. It only helps Elon Musk. Go figure. Just another coinky dink. All right, got to get out. Thanks again to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my guest today, Craig Holman of Public Citizen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always appreciated, always an honor. We hope we didn't bum you out too much. If you like to, if you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That service for free made possible by those of you kind enough to hit a donate button at Bradblog or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com and on the Facebooks and all the other social media sites, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. See you there. Till we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.